Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? I'm your host, Owen Benjamin, and today is going to be a very special episode. It's going to be the type of episode that I will be able to do in the future because of listener support from Patreon. Because I always never wanted to critique or just go over other people's comedy. Because I just think that it seems kind of arrogant. I always wanted to just do my own. But if it's just for a small group of people, I don't mind it. And it's typically going to be very positive. But I still don't. Like, today's episode is going to be discussing Dave Chappelle and his Saturday Night Live monologue, which in my opinion is one of the best 12 minutes of comedy and social commentary I've ever seen. So I want to go through beat for beat. I did a post on Instagram about how great it was. And my buddy, Jimmy from Silicon Valley, Asian dude, I do a podcast with him. Great dude. I did a post about how my dad is a rhetoric professor, like public speech, persuasion, and how he thought that Chappelle, it was one of the best things he'd ever seen. And Jimmy said, "Can you explain? Like, why did he think it was so good?" And I wrote a little bit of it on Instagram, and I was like, you know, that'd be a great Why Didn't They Laugh episode. And since the network I'm on, this is the last week that they're in existence. It was the Sideshow Network, and it's out of the Improv of Hollywood. Great network. You know, Jesse May is on there. Adam Ray. They had some really good people, and they all have to find new homes. And I'm kind of keeping my ear out for new homes, but I kind of also just want to do it solo. That way I just upload stuff, and that's where these pledges go. So far we have 6 Patreons, which is awesome. And I want to give a shout out. Danny, Joe, Ilu, A-I-L-U. I hope I'm getting that correct. Tyler and Jim. You guys all came through from just me saying this on my last episode, and I didn't even have a game plan or anything. So you guys kind of jumped off the deep end with me, and I really appreciate it. But I finally set it up. So these are the categories that you can pledge and whatnot. I'm doing it in a weird way because I just don't, like, you know, Patreon says that at one tier, you do like chats with fans, and another tier, I'll do that for free. You don't have to pay me shit. I feel like that's weird. I don't like that. You know, it's basically just, there's one tier. There's several tier. Like, you can, do $1 a month. That gets you tribe member status. For those of you that listen to my Sapiens episodes, I think that's, both a little true and a little funny that you are now a part of my tribe. It says official Patreon status. This means you'll get access to my Patreon only feed. That means episodes like this and my endless appreciation. You will get podcast episodes not available to the public. And then the next level, also tribe members, $3 a month, and you get the exact same thing. It just says slightly more than the first tier, but the reward is the same. It's only if you want to contribute more. Because I've been a busboy and in a $50 million movie in the same year. So I know how income and where you're at varies. And if you have a dollar, if you have $3, great. If you have $5, same thing. This, you get the same stuff. Then you get up to $10 a month. This one, it's the same stuff. It's just you get a free ticket to any of my live shows for you and 2 guests when I come to your city. So keep an eye out. When I ever come near your city to do stand-up, you can hit me up and I'll get you free tickets. But just between me and you, I'd probably do it anyway. I really like Why Didn't They Laugh listeners. They are awesome. They always come out and support. And that's another thing. I don't really feel like you're my fan. I feel like we participate with each other in this crazy life experience. Cause this podcast isn't really just entertainment. It's like, it's for people that like to think, and I'm not above you in any way. So I always feel that some of these things are odd, but I do need help. But then you have $25 a month, and that gets you the status of legend. This is the highest tier, same rewards as all the previous ones, except you can personally ask me for favors like fighting your boss or picking you up from the airport. The chances are low that I will come through, but that's the level we're talking about, fighting bosses. Okay, so that's that. And if you can't join, literally don't worry about it. It's not a big deal at all. Because if I just get enough to pay for the bandwidth that it costs each month, and like, you know, hard drives and microphones, and if I get enough to maybe take another weekend off a month from being on the road, I can dedicate more time to podcasting and just doing this type of stuff. So that's how you can participate. And the episodes you will be getting are going to be awesome. Like this episode today is going to be awesome because it's not just me analyzing my jokes, which are fun. That's a good time. I'm going to do another one of those this week as well. But to be able to analyze cultural phenomenons like what we witnessed on Saturday Night Live is so fun for me. So this is how Chappelle started. Oh, and by the way, what month is this? December, I'm going to be all over the place. So St. Louis, Houston, Phoenix, and there's one more. Pittsburgh. I'm doing full weekends in all those cities. So go to hugepianist.com or owenbenjamin.com. Same thing. I just think Huge Pianist is funny for tickets. Or email me at whydidn'tthelaugh@gmail.com. And then January, I'm doing an arena tour with the Impractical Jokers. I will be doing all of them now. So at first, I thought it was just half. Now I'm doing all of them. So the O2 arenas in London and Manchester, Belfast, Dublin. It's going to be absolutely fucking amazing. I've never done 20,000 seats, and we'll be doing it every night because those guys are just the best. And they are the best in person. The Jokers are everything you want them to be and more. I've known them since MySpace. You know, we used to be friends on, obviously we're still friends, but on MySpace, we would write to each other about each other's sketches and stuff, you know? There's just a class of artists that just kind of gravitate towards each other, and it's interesting. Like, the fame and money have not changed these dudes. It's pretty great to watch. And I would be promoting those shows, but I'm pretty sure they're all sold out because they're fucking funny. All right, so let's start this off with the Dave Chappelle monologue. He's coming out right now. Okay, bear in mind, you got to think about his backstory, you know? Personal credibility is one of the biggest things for public speech. It's like, who is the one speaking? And Chappelle at this point is as close as you're going to get to, you know, Odysseus, to like a returning hero. Dave Chappelle was the biggest name in comedy when I was in college. The Chappelle Show was an absolute cultural phenomenon. And then he went away. And the way he went away was legendary. He left $70 million on the table. They were going to pay him $70 million and he left. He went to Africa. Everyone said he went crazy. But if you think about it, it's almost like he went sane. What people don't understand about Hollywood and fame, like I recently did a post on Facebook about Hollywood and its contribution to the rise of Donald Trump. And I did it from a perspective that a lot of people that I know in Hollywood probably wouldn't think of. But I didn't add, and I don't regret it, but I probably should have added their point of view, but it just, that would have been too long. You know, I basically just went through how someone could become a Trump supporter that isn't racist, that isn't hateful, that isn't sexist. And I did it in very descriptive terms. You know, I talked about a single mom who is, you just have to read it. I'm not going to go through the whole thing right now. It's a waste of your time, but it's, people really responded well to it, which I thought was cool because it could have went either way. You know, I was being kind of intense, per usual. But the other side is also true. And a lot of people don't understand what it's like to be famous or rich. And it isn't the lollipops and unicorns that a lot of people believe. And that is almost impossible to explain to people. A, I've never experienced it on the level of a Chappelle or these people, but I have enough where I do see where things can really go bad. And he was in a position where everyone in the world recognized him and looked at him and came up to him. And the thing that happened with his show is he is so brilliant that he used high-level satire, high-level, like the blind Ku Klux Klan member. That's brilliant. Like that's Mark Twain shit. But the problem with a lot of the mass of America is, I'm not going to use the word dumb because that's a cop-out. They're not nuanced to race or culture or some of these issues that Dave's making fun of. You know, a lot of them aren't, they're not in an area of the country where they have a lot of interaction with the people he's making fun of or satirizing or empowering. So, you know, he had an episode or a sketch about a family named like the Niggers. And I'll only use that word in like quoting it, like what I just did. I'm not going to say the N words. That's just ridiculous. But you got to understand what happens at that point. Now you have a bunch of college kids from, you know, Indiana, and they'll just come up to you and start saying this shit. They'll quote your own sketches in with words that you thought our nation was past. And it's easy to lose your mind. And then it's easy for when you start seeing people, actually, no, it's easy to keep your mind. And then when you start seeing people, you see you as a commodity, not as a human being, you know, when you talk agents and producers and all this stuff. And he's like, dude, I haven't changed. Like, I'm still the same dude. And this is all speculation. I wasn't with him when all this happened. I've only met him a few times. You know, he's kind of a shy dude, nice, humble. Everyone I know loves him. But what I think happened was he rejected money for personal autonomy. And what is more heroic than that? He literally, in a world where corporate greed and lies and deceit for small bags of silver seem to be taking over. And so for someone to publicly reject that and go to Africa and then settle down in Ohio and then keep touring and keep being a comedian and keep doing what you do and then finally coming back to Saturday Night Live the first weekend after the election, you can't get more credibility, ladies and gentlemen. Bear in mind, Oprah Winfrey was attacked by the left for saying that she would give Trump a chance. Oprah Winfrey, the only female billionaire in American history to make her own money. The first black billionaire in the history of America. You know, she was in the color purple. I mean, this is Oprah Winfrey. And still like low level comics on Twitter are like, how dare you, Oprah? So bear in mind, credibility is not easy to come by in this environment. And Chappelle has it. He has it. So what's he going to do with it? You know, in a previous episode, I did Mercy versus Revenge. I think that was my last episode or the one before. It was going through experiences I've had on stage where someone attacks me. And do you show them mercy or do you execute them publicly? And watch. I mean, just watch. And then we'll just keep going from here. So the whole world is listening.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, guys. You know, I know it's been a long time. It's been a long time, so please be patient. You know, I didn't know that Donald Trump was going to win the election. I did suspect it. Seemed like Hillary was doing well in the polls, and yet I know the whites.
Okay, just look at that. So he says that, and then he does his classic buckle over laughing. That's kind of like what he does. He'll say something and then relieve stress with it. And his opening has been a long time. He's like, be patient, been a long time. Like, that relieves stress for the crowd. That allows them to, like, sink in and be like, it's okay. That's the Dave we all know. And just like Saturday Night Live is always talking about member berries, people want a member. They want a member Chappelle, like back in the day. You know, we want that. We don't want to see another one of our heroes fall. So he's already saying that. And then his thing that he suspected it because he knows the whites, it's just subtle enough to just... No one really knows what he means by that, but at the same time, everyone knows exactly what he means. All right, let's continue.
You guys aren't as full of surprises as you used to be. And I think I speak for all of Black America when I say that we are all praying for Omarosa. I don't even know what she's doing in the news. But America's done it. We've actually elected an internet troll as our president.
Okay, that's his first act of mercy in an environment that keeps calling Trump Hitler or Nazi fascist. He just called him what a lot of people accurately probably think he is, a troll. He's a guy that he'll troll you, you know? And that, like, that's a unifying joke, because hyperbole doesn't work well in this environment. Like, when you say, like, we've elected a Nazi, all that would do is scare people, and it's not even accurate. What he did is he's stating reality and just letting it sit and just letting people realize that we're living in the joke, and that you don't have to manipulate life. All right, check this out.
Serious. We've never seen anything like it. I haven't seen white people this mad since the OJ version. Split screen with white people on both sides. Ah! I'm not saying I'm enjoying it. I'm just saying I've never seen this before. I watched a white riot in Portland, Oregon on television the other night.
I mean, it doesn't get better than that. He didn't have to make fun of him. All he did is state reality. There's a white riot in Portland, Oregon. And it's also like, look at what he's doing so subtly. I've never seen white people so angry. He's making fun of the left in that moment, but he's also making fun of the right. He's not picking sides. He's being a comic, because in a comedian's mind, there is no left or right. There is no up or down. There is no good or bad. There just is. And that's why he's so fucking pure. All right, let's keep listening.
The news said they did $1 million worth of damage. Every black person was watching that like amateurs. So I'm staying out of it. I'm just going to take a knee like Kaepernick and let the whites figure this out amongst themselves. Because for us, you know what I mean? We've been here before. And I don't even think it's the most important thing we're dealing with, man. Don't forget all things that are going on. Shootings. What do you think about that? All these shootings in the last year. The worst mass shootings in the history of the United States. Pulse nightclub, which they said ISIS did. And then it turned out that wasn't exactly what happened. And if that is what happened, then ISIS is scarier than I thought, because they have very deep cover operatives. Look, guys, I'm going down deep for this one. I might have to get a Grindr account and jerk a few guys off and throw them off the trail.
All right, look at that. Another hot issue sidestepped. The issue of Muslims, whether or not, you know, people are scared of Muslims, people are scared of ISIS, people have Islamophobia, or like, what is all this? He's just sidestepping it and just showing it as ridiculous. When he's saying, like, was it ISIS or was it a closet gay guy? Like, he's basically saying, if that is ISIS, think about how deep your cover has to be. You have to, like, fake being gay for a while and then just pop up. And again, it's not any statement. He's not saying anything about Muslims or immigration or ISIS or mass shootings. All he's saying is it's a problem. Everyone can agree with that. Mass shootings are a problem. And he's pointing out the absurdity of labeling it ISIS or labeling it anything. It's brilliant. All right, watch.
I think the guy was in ISIS. What happened was he pledged allegiance to ISIS before he did what he did, which is not the same as being in ISIS. You know what I mean? Like, I was going to have sex with a girl, and right before I did it, I screamed out, Wu-Tang. That don't mean I'm in the Wu-Tang Clan. I'm just shouting Wu-Tang out.
I mean, that's obviously just funny. He just used an example that's accurate and equally ridiculous. Basically, the shooting didn't have as much to do with ISIS as people thought. It was a disturbed man who did a horrific act and then pledged allegiance right before committing the act. He's not saying ISIS is not a problem. He's not saying jihadism isn't a problem. He's just saying this is what happened. Think about it. It's funny. And he continues. Oh, and he's also redirecting the post-election insanity, where he's saying, listen, this happened. You think this is the first time this has happened? People have not had the person they want win? Okay. We still have actual problems, though. All right, here we go.
Some more shootings than I can literally count. You can't even go to the goddamn zoo without seeing a shooting nowadays. They shot a gorilla in my local zoo. And the Cincinnati police said shooting that gorilla was the toughest decision this department ever had to make.
Okay, this is the one time in the monologue that as I was watching it, I was like, eh. Because for those of you that know the gorilla story, they had to shoot the gorilla. I would always put a child's life over a gorilla's. Like, it's no question. But then he takes it somewhere. Check this out.
I said, well, you about to see a lot of niggas in gorilla costumes in Cincinnati.
And there you go. The payoff is shooting a gorilla is the hardest decision I ever had to make. And then he pivots and he makes it like, how come cops don't say that about black shootings? That's hilarious. That's so even that moment where I was like, you can't complain about the gorilla shooting. You gotta save the kid. And then he's like, he's using it as a way to show that the police had more remorse over shooting a gorilla than some of these unarmed black shootings. And that's his joke. And it's funny. It's very funny. And he continues.
Why do we have to say that? Why do we have to say that Black Lives Matter? Now, I admit that is not the best slogan, but McDonald's already took You Deserve a Break today. And I guess it's kind of catchy because everyone else is biting it. Even the police bite it. Blue Lives Matter. What, was he born a police? That is not a blue life. That's a blue suit. If you don't like it, take that suit off, find a new job. Because I'm going to tell you right now, if I could quit being black today, I'd be out the game.
Okay, that's by far the best argument I've ever heard against Blue Lives Matter thing, because I'm very close with a lot of police, have a lot of respect for the police. I think a lot of them get thrown under the bus. What he just said is absolutely perfect. That people that criticize Blue Lives Matter, the brilliant thing is, it's not your skin. You can quit, you know? Then the argument would be, you know, it's my job, blah, blah. But look at what he did. He just sidestepped the whole thing. He's saying, and then what else he did is he said that if he could quit being black, he would. You know, if it was anyone else, he would get backlash and people would say, oh, you have no pride in being black. You're an Uncle Tom. How dare you say that? It would be insane. But who the fuck could criticize Dave Chappelle as far as like what he can and cannot say about being black? And that doesn't take away from what he feels as a black, like pride he has. All he's saying is it's a little harder. It's a little harder being black than it is not being black. But it's not what people make it to be. All right, here we go.
I did the next best thing. I became a rich black person, which is harder than you think because, you know, your life becomes gentrified, like Brooklyn. all your black friends start moving out and all these new white friends start moving in. You find yourself saying things to friends you grew up with that you never dreamed you'd say. I'm sorry, nigga, you can't come with us. There's only enough room in the balloon basket for four. Ta-ta.
Okay, that's one of the best uses of imagery I've ever seen a comedian. That part actually inspired me and made me reevaluate some of my jokes and make them more descriptive. Because what's a better way to describe gentrification and wealth than a balloon basket? Because think about it. Think about what wealth is and think about what social class is. When you're in a balloon basket, you are with a small group of people or alone, and you're above everyone else looking down. And you're in a majestic looking thing that people look up at with awe. But what else is a balloon basket? It's lonely. It evokes feelings of isolation. You feel trapped and it's just quiet and just, there's just, it does the perfect parallel between the benefits of wealth, but also the isolation and the limitations of being wealth. And that was perfect. And sometimes, like, when you can give someone an image, like he just gave, of him in a balloon basket with a few white people and his black friends back on the ground, that will make you believe his narrative more than any stat or any bullshit that a lot of people use. That was perfect. That was literally a perfect use of imagery. Here we go.
Trump, he did it. He's our president. And I feel bad saying it. I'm staying in a Trump hotel right now. I don't know if he's going to make a good president, but he makes a swell hotel suite. I'm going to tell you that. Housekeeping comes in the morning and cleans my room, and I just, hey, good morning, housekeeping. Grab a big handful of pussy and say, you know. Boss said it was okay.
All right. Brilliant. He took this subject that, you know, the how dare you subject, and he flipped it on his head. He basically showed what the grabbing pussy gate thing, the actual problem with it is when a leader shows a behavior is okay, what does it do to the common man? That's the problem. Because whenever people judge Donald Trump, every man and woman has said something to that level of weird and gross and more. And we all know that. We all have. I used to be a piano player at weddings. I used to be a bartender. I used to be a doorman. I used to overhear conversations for a living. And women are no better. And we are all disgusting. But what he's saying is, look, it empowers people to do what he says. Now, if you're a good person with morals, It doesn't affect you at all. But what he's basically saying is the door was open. This is now a joke. All right, let's go.
Sorry about that, Lauren.
Yeah, because he just said pussy.
All my black friends who have money said the same thing when Trump got elected. That's it, bro. I'm out. I'm leaving the country. You coming with us? Nah, I'm good, dog. I'm gonna stay here and get this tax break, see how it works out. Because that's how it is being Dave Chappelle. It's the first time I got some money, it didn't work out like that. The most unlikely thing that happened ever was a black president came out of nowhere, like, come on, everybody, let's start thinking about everyone else. Oh, nigga, I just got this money!
And that is the most incredible thing he did the whole show. He separated the difference between black as a race and black as a culture, and then also white as a race and white as an economic class, which doesn't seem to happen very often. But it's so true. A wealthy black man and a wealthy white man have more in common than members of the own race of different economic statuses. What he's basically saying, because one of the major faults I saw with criticizing Trump was the tax thing. It's like, this man doesn't pay taxes. How dare you? There isn't a person alive that wouldn't take tax breaks. It's human nature and everyone knows it. So to watch the hypocrisy of the left talk about, Trump should have paid all his taxes. No, he shouldn't. If you can write off your office, even though it's not really an office, you do it. You write off everything you can. And anyone who understands money knows that that was a ridiculous criticism, because he could do depreciation of his real estate. So why would you give the federal government money that you don't have to? It's not a charity. You know, most of that money goes to bombs. IRS is a black hole of no accountability. Why do that? What Chappelle's saying is, of course he's happy that a black man was elected president, but why did it have to happen right as he got money? And that's the type of honest thing that makes Chappelle so brilliant, because he's saying, like, I'm in the balloon basket right now. Still black, still culturally black, still obviously physically black, but I'm in the balloon basket. And I felt a twinge of like, hey, you know what? Trump might get me more money. All right, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit here. Hang on.
A few weeks ago, I went to the White House for a party.
This is the shit. Okay, look at what he does. I'll preface this one. So many people make the mistake of doing like a very serious monologue or a serious section of a comedy without keeping the comedy going. Watch how Chappelle doesn't even have to pander to the comedy gods. All he has to do is keep listing one detail that is actually valid to keep the laughs going in a very, very serious monologue. Listen.
The first time I'd been there in many years, and it was very exciting. And BET had sponsored the party, so everyone there was black. And it was beautiful. I walked through the gates. You know, I'm from Washington, so I saw the bus stop, well, the corner where the bus stop used to be, where I used to catch the bus to school and dream about nights like tonight. It was a really, really beautiful night. And at the end of the night, everyone went into the West Wing of the White House, and it was a huge party. And everybody in there was black except for Bradley Cooper for some reason. And on the walls were pictures of all the presidents of the past. Now, I'm not sure if this is true, but to my knowledge, the first black person that was officially invited to the White House was Frederick Douglass. They stopped him at the gates. Abraham Lincoln had to walk out himself and escort Frederick Douglass into the White House. And it didn't happen again, as far as I know, until Roosevelt was president. Roosevelt was president, he had a black guy over and got so much flack from the media that he literally said, I will never have a nigger in this house again. I thought about that and I looked at that room and I saw all those black faces in Bradley. And I saw...
Look at that. Look at what he did. Just Bradley Cooper's existence is enough to keep him in the realm of comedy. When he's talking about... what he's accomplishing is unbelievable. He's showing what we've accomplished as a nation, that Roosevelt, 20th century Roosevelt, you know, considered one of the most liberal, progressive presidents in our history, wouldn't let a black man in there. Now there's a BET party happening, and he's talking about his bus stop. Everyone knows what it feels like to be on a bus stop and dreaming. And he's actually done his dreams. And he's looking out at this party that's happening in the White House. This is a very real moment. And watch how he doesn't, just watch, just listen. It's fucking crazy. Listen.
Happy everybody was. These people who had been historically disenfranchised. And it made me feel hopeful. And it made me feel proud to be an American. And it made me very happy about the prospects of our country. So, in that spirit.
Okay. And then I won't stop again because I just want to let this one go. But it takes balls to be optimistic. Because most of the time people would be like, how dare you? Like, do you not know what's happening? The world's going to hell. He's literally like, look at what we've done. Take pride in what we've done. We, as a nation, have went from slavery in the worst kind, chattel slavery, you know, where you treat humans like farm animals. Because slavery's happened for thousands of years. Every single group of people has been a slave or a slave owner at some point, or both, actually, genetically. But American slavery was extra dark because it was one color of humans and it was the worst type of slavery. You couldn't buy your way out like the Irish. You're stuck. And from there to here, you know, a BET party with Bradley Cooper, but he also doesn't keep on his blinders. He also... has this look of his crazy eyes where he's like, I left $70 million on the table. Don't fuck with me. Listen to how he closes this. He has that optimistic uplift and then this.
I'm wishing Donald Trump luck, and I'm going to give him a chance. And we, the historically disenfranchised, demand that he give us one too. Thank you very much.
That's it. That's the best thing he could have. In my opinion, there's nothing he could have done better. Because he's saying, as an American, I know there's more on the line than who I want and what I want. That committing to democracy and committing to an election is very important, and he'll give him a chance. But then he uses the verb demand, not ask. Demand. Demand is a word that has connotations of, there's a threat in that word. It's a very mild threat, but it's there. It's saying a demand is, it starts a request with the word if, and then if not. So he's saying historically a disenfranchised group that has come up a tremendous amount, but still knows where things can go. Like a group that knows how bad things can get, you know, that it's a two-way street. And I bet that's the type of thing that made, because persuasion, all comedy is an act of persuasion. And if the girl, Kate McKinney, who played the piano, I'm not going to criticize people. That's why I'm trying to stay away from that. But like what she did is she realigned the tribes where Hillary supporters felt vindicated and felt inspired and felt beautiful, and non-Hillary supporters felt alienated. And like, why would you play an entire dramatic song? Why would you act more sad than after 9/11? You just did a sketch with Donald Trump 9 months ago. He was the host of Saturday Night Live. You make money on him. So that was a divisive act. Not criticizing it. I don't know what she's going through. I don't know what. I'm trying not to judge people. But what he did is he aligned people. He was... Trump supporters would think, oh, okay. Yeah, we should respect how far we've come. We should respect a group of people that were denied access to the White House and now have access. And non-Trump supporters would be like, you know what? If Dave Chappelle, the man who left $70 million on the table and flew to Africa, can give him a chance, I'm a Portland hipster. I should too. And of course, that didn't happen universally. Of course, he got criticism. Of course, people only reaffirmed their insane stances. But as a comedian, what he accomplished was humor, the unity of a nation. He didn't crack. He didn't execute. He showed compassion, and it was wonderful. And that's why I wanted to go through that today and really break down the nuance of this. Like, how much goes into this? And whether or not it's conscious or unconscious for a man like Dave Chappelle, I don't know. You know, some people have done something so long. You know, in sports, you have your Tiger Woods that have just worked at it so much that every movement is calculated and worked and worked and worked. And then sometimes you just have those natural athletes that, of course, they put in their Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours. But, you know, like the Bo Jacksons who can shoot bows and arrows with their feet. You know, no one knows why he's so good at everything. Who knows? Who knows if he sat down and thought about this, or does he just truly have that almost space alien man from Mars ability of looking objectively at our culture and our people without identity politics? Because Dave Chappelle doesn't do identity politics. He doesn't, even if he does start a sentence with "as a black man," it isn't how most people do it. You know, we're drowning in identity politics in this country where everybody's like, well, as a rape survivor, or as a Arab, or as someone who is friends with a black man, who's friends with a gay man. It's like a good principle, a good argument, a solid stance doesn't care what you are. And if you need to argue your opinion with "as a dot, dot, dot," it's a weak opinion. And you're only triggering emotions, which is exactly what Trump did brilliantly. So just know that. Just know that that's reality. All right. That's going to do it. So as I said earlier, patreon.com/WDTL. The link will be in this episode. $1, $3, $5, $25, whatever you want, $1 million a month. If you're Warren Buffett and for some reason you just love this shit, become a part of this, because these type of episodes I won't release, to the public as often, because, I don't want to be quoted as like saying something about other people. It just kind of, it's really annoying. So it's for a smaller group of people, I think. And same with my South Park reviews and stuff, because I'm trying not to get into politics, but there's no way to not discuss politics when you're reviewing South Park or Dave Chappelle's monologue right after an election. And I'm on the road all the time, so hugepianist.com, write to me. I love hearing what you write, and I promise there's been a couple comics that have told me that they want me to break down their jokes, and I am. I know I've taken a few weeks, and I apologize, but that will come. So that'll come. And check out Case Closed, Beers Open, my brother and my wife's podcast. It's still in the iTunes top 100. That's growing really fast. It's a good episode. And it's a good, this week's episode was funny. And we got sponsored on that episode by HelloFresh. Really cool service. They send fresh, awesome food to your door, and then like directions on how to cook it and all this stuff. And we have a promo code BEERSOPEN, so you get $35 off. I'm going to get that for a few people for Christmas presents because we've had a blast with it. But it's tough to like promote that stuff on that podcast because we're in character. Like I don't talk as myself. Same with my brother. Only Amy is herself, and she's just the narrator. So yeah, if you want to help out, just try that for a week. See if you like it. It's not expensive. It's cheaper than Whole Foods, and it's better food. HelloFresh.com, and use promo code BEERSOPEN. So that's keeping that podcast going, which is awesome. Same with the coasters. People keep buying the coasters at HugePianist.com. I make beer coasters with the trees my brother cuts down as a lumberjack. I've been selling these on the road, and people have been loving them. But they don't believe me that it's real. And then they'll like check out my Instagram videos and see that like we really do cut down massive trees and then chop them up and make beer coasters out of them. And I sell them for $5 each, which means I'm making about 50 cents an hour, but it keeps my hands off my phone because I think my phone is kind of destroying my brain. So it's the best therapy possible. And it reminds people to check out Case Closed, Beers Open, because I have my own brander, so it burns it into the podcast or into the beer coaster, and it has little images of my brother and my big heads because we both have huge stupid heads. Have a great Thanksgiving. I'm recording this today on Thanksgiving. I'm thankful for all of you for listening and connecting to me and making the internet something beautiful and not angry. I'm thankful, of course, to my family. I'm nothing without them. It's amazing what I've been able to get out of this life with Amy and Walter and my uncle staying with us right now. My parents, my brother, my nieces, my new nephew. It's amazing. My three dogs. You know, I've had a career that I can use to learn things like I've seen inside the looking glass, and I'm not really good at living inside the looking glass. And as if I've criticized Los Angeles on social media, I promise that it's just to make a point, and I do believe what I'm saying, but I also love Los Angeles. There's great weather, great food. Some of my best friends live there, and I miss them a lot. You know, it aches sometimes that I can't walk to the improv and hang out with my buddies. There's some brilliant people there, but it is also the capital from Hunger Games, and I don't belong there. I belong outside the capital because that's what I am. So it's if I sound like I'm being critical, I'm just giving a perspective of someone who knows the Capitol and also knows District 12. And, you know, I'm just giving my two cents. And if I offended Nick Thune, I'm really sorry. I don't know if you guys witnessed me and Nick Thune's little beef, but we started comedy together in 03. He was doing an open mic at the same time I was doing an open mic. And a girl I was dating, her friend thought he was hot. So I started talking to him. We became very close friends. I had my own show at the Improv in Hollywood. It was called After Hours with Owen. It was a midnight show at Saturday because I could fill it because I was a busboy. And I knew a lot of people despite not being, you know, famous or known because I worked at a restaurant and I was a janitor at the Roosevelt Hotel. And so I added him to it. So it was After Hours with Owen and Nick, and me and him would do songs together, and it was awesome. And I cut his first demo reel to get him into Aspen Comedy Fest. We're very close. And then we kind of drifted apart, as friends do. And on one of my posts, he wrote, you know, I have to unfollow you now. You've been really negative about Los Angeles. You know, I hope you find your way or some shit. So I just blasted him. I'm like, if you're going to go public, let's go public. I made sure I didn't say anything personal that I knew would affect his career or hurt him deeply, but I just made fun of his comedy, how he sounds like Mitch Hedberg, and without his guitar, people could hear the death silence of his bombs, and then he wears tight pants, so I know he has no balls. That's why he won't say this shit to my face. And that spawned him to call me, and we had a 45-minute talk, and I see where he's coming from. You know, he told me that to have any type of strong opinion makes me less sellable to, you know, corporates and TV and movies. And I agreed. I said, I know, I get that, but I can't do that. And you have to understand that. And he was like, well, I hope for your wife and child's sake that you think of them in your career. And I said, don't tell me how to take care of my family because I'm doing fine. And I felt like almost like it was that scene from Good Will Hunting where I was Robin Williams and he was the other professor with all the medals, you know, and he's telling me how much money he makes, you know, doing Geico and or not Geico, fucking one of these companies. And I'm happy for him. That's the thing I told him. I go, bro, I am so happy and honored that we're friends. And that's how I felt up until you blasted me publicly. And then he said he was sorry. He's like, I should have just written that to you. And I was like, yeah, if you had written that to me, I would have felt like you really had my back. Like that you were like concerned and I would have loved you for it. But the public bashing has got to pull back. And I don't just mean it with him because we did make up. I love him. I still love him. You know, I'll forgive anything as long as someone just calls me and doesn't make a spectacle of me. But people seem to bash public and apologize private. And that kind of pushes a narrative in this country that people hate each other more than they do. That's happened to me several times. People in public will be like, how dare you? You're blah, blah, blah. And then privately later, they say, I calmed down. I thought about it. I was really wrong for saying that publicly. I'm like, how come you don't fucking do the apology public? Like you just embarrassed me in public. But I took down my bashing of him because I don't want to hurt him. But like, you can't let someone do that. Some people were like, oh, I thought you had thicker skin. I'm like, I consider Nick a 14-year friend that we started together. And if you get that upset about me making fun of a city, I mean, what's wrong with you? I just got done shoveling my driveway in a 3,000 person town. And if you can't take the criticism that when you live in the mecca of American culture, maybe you need some thick skin. And I'm happy for Thune. I always have been. That's the weirdest thing about me, man. It's like, I never see this shit coming. I'm always like, oh yeah, me and Thune starred together. Dude, have you seen him on those commercials? I'm so fucking proud of him. I know that guy. And then you find out that the whole time he's been like, oh, Owen runs his mouth too much. He told me not to make fun of Aziz Ansari too. He's like, oh, why would you make fun of him? Like that can hurt your career. I'm like, bro, we want different things out of life. My ultimate career is stand-up and podcasting and writing books. I don't give a, I'm fucking too tall for LA. I'm 6'7". You think I could? It's like, I don't want that shit. When I was dating Christina Ricci in 09, people used to fucking follow us around, take pictures and put it in Us Weekly and shit and make up lies. And I got up to 300 pounds from depression. Like I've been in the looking glass and it fucking sucks. You don't think, of course I want cash. You don't think I want his Dell computer money? Of course. But like at what cost? Like you have to just be you have to like pretend your whole life. You have to pretend that like 50,000 people marching in downtown LA that could be helping homeless people isn't fucking hypocritical? Do I have to just keep that to myself? That these motherfuckers probably stepped over homeless people to bash a Democratic election? And that's, it's like, no, just keep that to yourself, man. I mean, we all think the things you say, but like, you can't say it. Fuck that. I got into comedy because I'm a rock star. My brother was talking about that the other day. He was like, dude, at 18, like, I didn't know how you lived like that. I watched you drink a gallon of wine and then step on a glass. You needed 20 stitches and the blood coming out of your foot was pink from all the booze. And then you kept laughing. You stole a fucking walking stick and went out and partied more. He's like, you were fucking, how did you live like that? That's me. That's me. I'm not corporate. I'm not the type of guy that's like, well, according to the stats, if I don't have my opinion, I fucking will get more money. No, I have plenty. My goal is to make enough money for a house and a car. I have fucking more than I could ever imagine. Now I want the freedom to stay home. I don't feel as much like a rock star. I'm 36 with a baby. I don't want to step on a gallon of wine again, you know, because that would come out of his future. But don't think for a second I'm going to be quiet, because I'm not cruel. I'm not mean. If I make fun of Aziz Ansari, it's because he is above me. He could hurt my career. He's the guy that everybody can't stand in LA, but everyone keeps their mouth shut. I wonder who else was like that. And then people just bash once it's cool. You know, you see these guys like, what's that guy? Like Judd Apatow, who makes fun of Cosby every third. He does he was doing three tweets a day bashing Cosby. Where was that before? Where was that when that wasn't cool? The thing about comedians is we're supposed to be the rock stars that say the shit that everyone else is scared of, because we're like, fuck you. We'll burn down this fucker before you can. You can't take anything from me because I don't want your fucking money. And that's why Dave Chappelle is the man, because he said that. He said, I don't want your $70 million if it empowers dumb white fuckers to say nigger to me on the street. And that is comedy. You know? The Nick Thunes of the world would have advised Chappelle, hey, no, just take that money. What would be, like, how many times in your life will you get that much money? You know, you don't think that I don't want that, but I mean, come on, man. And I wouldn't even be talking shit right now if it wasn't for, like, yeah, we're fine, we're cool, but it's like, dude, don't tell me how to fucking take care of my baby and my wife without, you know, without backlash. And I'm way more vicious in person. That's why people don't really talk this shit in person. Because you can look at a man like me and know, oh shit, I better say this online and do it publicly so I can get social brownie points and have no risk of someone fucking collapsing my throat. And I said that on the phone. I said, Nick, I will fuck you up, man. And he started laughing. And I'm like, you think that's funny? No one's here to listen. Like, we're not on Facebook right now. You're not going to get all your buddies being like, oh, let's see what happens. It's just me and you talking. When you laugh, are you laughing for my benefit or the invisible people in your mind? Because it is a fucking cold world out there, man. And if you come at me publicly, I mean, fuck. I live in a town where we're, you know, our fear isn't not getting an audition. It's a bear. It's bears, coyotes, negative 30 and the fucking furnace goes out. And people are like, oh, well, you made this decision recently. No, that's where I'm from. This is my people. I was born and raised 6 hours north of New York City in an area where you're only judged by if you're funny, if you can drink, and if you don't piss people off. So the beauty of LA is undeniable. The brilliance of LA is undeniable. And just like the birds of paradise on these islands where they get these beautiful plumes and these feathers and this and evolutionary things that no one else can get that are just beautiful, the peacock's feathers. You know what that is? That's all excess calories because they don't have predators. You don't see that on a chicken or a pigeon. No. Because they have predators. You don't see that on a wild turkey or deer. You don't see this big fat heifer of a deer because it has to run. And as beautiful as LA can be, and it is beautiful, and there's a lot of natives in LA, like shout out to Jordy Fox, best friend since we started together at 22 in LA. I mean, he was doing it before me. He's from LA. Motherfucker is ice. I wouldn't fight Jordy Fox. He's over a foot shorter than me. Everyone from LA isn't a pussy. Tons of people. I relate the most to the Mexicans, to be honest with you, and the Jews, because they're very just culturally so logical and got it together that just, those are my people. But these birds of paradise, they want to tell me how to fit in so that I can also get a Silver Lake fucking office and a little dog and, you know, corporate money. I don't think they know how quickly death comes to all of us, and whether or not you want to fucking die as a pussy or as a man. Because I was talking to Jordy about that, because Jordy's from LA. And like the natives of LA are not, they love the shit I talk about LA because they're the same people. Same with the natives of Atlanta. I used to live in Atlanta with my brother. We used to do tree work there, and they'd say, "Are you a Yankee or a damn Yankee?" And we'd say, "What's the difference?" And then he goes, "Are you just visiting or are you staying?" And we'd say, "We're staying." He'd go, "Then you're a damn Yankee. You know why the dirt is red? Because of Yankee blood." So basically what they're saying is that you invade our place. You can come hang out, but if you want to set up shop, you better not be a bitch. And I think the native Los Angelinos, shout out to Gene Pompa, another native Los Angelino, a 5-generation Mexicano, you know, who's fucking still pissed about Chavez Ravine. One of the funniest dudes on Facebook, by the way, Gene Pompa. Shit doesn't translate on stage very well, but that's all right. He's a good guy. All right, that's going to be it. That's a nice little rant, even though Nick Thune told me not to rant anymore because it'll affect my ability of getting corporate sponsors. But, you know, fuck that. If I just get 50 of you guys, I have 10,000 subscribers of this. Oddly, I already have more of, for Case Closed Beers Open, we're up to 20,000 subscribers. We've only done 7 episodes because it isn't as intense as this. This is intense. It's not for everybody. I get it. But, if I just get 1% of 10,000, 100 people doing between $1 and $25 a month, I don't give a fuck about fitting in. And I can actually do my job as a comedian, which is pointing out the hypocrisy of the world. And not that I'm judging. You don't think I'm a hypocrite? You know? You don't think I've told my wife not to like be unreasonable and that she's taking her own shit out on me? And then this morning I was a fucking dick to her because I ate too many cookies at 1 a.m. before bed. I had terrible nightmares. And for some reason I thought it was her fault. I'm a fucking hypocrite. I know that, but I'm not just going to fucking take the shit because that's not my job. And if we stop doing our jobs and we all try to be something we're not, our whole culture falls apart. When the porn stars start acting like senators and the comedians start acting like corporate spokespeople, everything falls apart. So fuck it. All right. I love you guys. Happy Thanksgiving. I'm thankful for everything in my life, including Thune, because Thune is a sweet man. And he's from Seattle, which is where my wife is also from. And he's a great joke writer. He really is a very good comedian. But like most of the shit I talked about him online was exaggerated. I mean, not totally untrue, but exaggerated. And I do love him. But if he fucking tells me to change my nature one more time, I will beat him with his own guitar. All right, I love you guys.